from KQED.
Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Golden State Warriors are headed to the Western Conference Finals, which kick off tomorrow against the Portland Trailblazers, but they will be without injured star Kevin Durant, who is sidelined with a calf strain. His status for the series is still up in the air. And meanwhile, the San Jose Sharks earned a decisive Game 1 victory in their conference finals matchup against the St. Louis Blues on Saturday. And in this segment of Forum, we're going to talk about playoff fever with veteran Bay Area sports writer Ray Ratto. And welcome, Ray.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning to you. I'm okay. Really delighted to see you and have you back here on Forum. It is pretty fevered out there with these two championships looming, yeah?
It's more fevered with the Warriors than it is with the Sharks, which is sort of standard. But I think hockey fans in the Bay Area are starting to get a sense that they might get to a Stanley Cup final again. And there's nothing quite like that to get casual fans involved, because when you're playing for a championship, all of a sudden everything seems bigger and better than anything that leads up to it.
All of a sudden you've got fans who were not fans before that lead up to the championship. But this has some really great storylines to it. First of all, let's talk about Steph and Seth Curry. I mean, brother against brother.
Mm-hmm.
This is historic.
It is, and yet one is basically the sun, the other one is Venus. Because, Steph Curry is Steph Curry. And Seth Curry, after bouncing around to a number of teams, finally found a landing place in Portland. He comes off the bench, but he plays effective minutes for them, which is one thing he had not done in his previous stands, because it's hard to get minutes in this league. And once you get them, it's hard to keep them. So he's cleared all the hurdles I think his talent will allow him to clear, and now he's playing for a conference championship, which in all likelihood he won't get this time, but I think he's made himself a truly valid NBA player in a way that, like, people see his name and don't think, oh, that's the brother of. I mean, now he's sort of forging an identity that belongs to him.
Well, he's also, I couldn't help thinking, what are the parents going to do? You know, Dell and Sonia Curry, and I hear they're going to just flip a coin in terms of what gear to wear and who to root for.
I suspect they will wear the different alternate gear for each game.
You think so?
Just because, you know, or what they might do to be even, you know, more like Solomon, is one will wear Warriors gear, the other one will wear Blazers gear, and then switch for game two and like that. So that way nobody feels slighted at Thanksgiving.
Well, we're going to see a local boy in this. Dawson Lillard actually grew up blocks
Damian
away.
Damian
Lillard. Excuse me. Grew up blocks away from Oracle Stadium and went to Oakland High School and so forth, playing for the Blazers, playing against the Dubs.
Yeah, he's an extraordinary player who people have not really glommed onto as much as they should, because he plays in the northwest corner of the United States. But people who follow basketball have always liked his game. He's a bit like Stephen Curry. Not quite as artistic, but it's hard to kill him. He just keeps coming at you and keeps coming at you. And he's got great shooting range. He's the sort of guy that you don't think you could build a franchise around, but Portland has. And I think Portland loves him every bit as much as Oakland and San Francisco love Stephen Curry in that way. I mean, there's not rings to show. There's not championship parades. But everybody in Portland who follows the Blazers, which is essentially everybody, looks at him as, that's our guy, even though he's from Oakland. They've adapted Lillard, and he's going to be theirs for as long as they can remember this team.
We're talking with veteran Bay Area sports writer Ray Ratto, talking about a couple of major championship possibilities for not only the Dubs, but also for the Sharks. And we'll get to that shortly here, and we'll also get your responses. How much in fever are you? How much are your pulses throbbing over really these big games that are coming up here and that are really we're in the midst of now? In fact, speaking about these big games coming up, I mean, you know, this may be hype. Always people love the rivalries and love the narratives and so forth. But I guess there's no love lost between Kevin Durant and CJ McCollum. But well, first of all, what do we know about Kevin Durant's health at this point?
We don't know anything other than that he's supposed to be reevaluated on Wednesday or Thursday. And I think most people think if it's not a severe problem, He might be back by game five. But again, there's nothing more unqualified than a sports writer turned doctor. So he'll be back when he's back. And I could easily see a situation in which if the Warriors take an early and, quote, commanding lead, that they might just be extra careful with him and have him sit at a game where he might otherwise play.
What about these rumors of DeMarcus Cousins returning?
I think they're mostly rumors. I haven't heard anybody credible who said, oh, I think they could rush him back for the final, because I don't think they want to rush him back, and I'm not sure he wants to be rushed back, only because he came off an Achilles tear. Now he's added a quad tear, and I think a third catastrophic injury might make him unhirable at a time when he should be very hirable. So I think...
You sure you're not doubling as a doctor? You just laid that out for us.
I can make anything up. Sports writers are excellent at that. No, I haven't heard anybody say, yeah, they're aiming for the finals or they're aiming for game five of this series. I haven't heard any projection of a date. And usually if you're not getting a projection of a date, it means that not even the doctors know. And if the doctors don't know, there's no reason to presume anything's on the horizon.
Again, we're talking to Ray Ratto. Are we going to see the slumping Steph Curry or the heroic Steph Curry from the last quarter against Houston?
I think you're going to see the more heroic Steph Curry because Portland likes to play at a quicker pace and they are less physical than Houston was. So I think Curry will have more freedom of movement and he's less likely to get into foul trouble than he did persistently against the Rockets. So I think you're going to see a more comfortable Curry anyway. I can't vouch for what his shooting touch will be, but I don't think every possession will be as much of a grind on him as it was in the Rockets series because the Rockets play that way and they make you feel uncomfortable. And that's on top of the series against the Los Angeles Clippers, which was all about the Clippers getting in the way of the Warriors and making things as uncomfortable as possible. So I think this is probably a good matchup for Curry to find his comfort zone again.
Well, I want to find out what Dubs fans think and any questions you might have for Ray Ratto, longtime Bay Area sports writer, former columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. We are going to talk about the Sharks, too, and you may want to weigh in on that as well. I know this is not KNBR, this is KQED, but feel free to join us, and we invite you to do that now. Our toll-free number is available. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Do you have the fever for either the Sharks or the Warriors? And if so, how do you think things are going to turn out, and what are you looking for? What are you rooting for? What are you worried about? Let's hear your thoughts. Toll-free 866-733-6786. Your opportunity to join the program is now, and you can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, and let's talk about the Sharks and the Sharks series. First, let's hear this. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we had a cut. Never mind. Scratch that. This was a pretty scary offense from the San Jose Sharks that we saw in this first matchup.
Yeah, well, that is what they do best. They score goals. They've had difficulty keeping them out. And I think there are a lot of people who think they were lucky to get out of the first series against Vegas. And they struggled probably more than they should have in the second round against Colorado. I mean, that Colorado was an eight seed, which is basically the lowest qualifier for the playoffs, forced them to seven games. And so the Sharks have been sort of white-knuckling their way through the playoffs so far. And yet against St. Louis, which is a team that loves to hit and they love to make the game slower, the Sharks got to get up and down as much as they wanted to. And I think it's caused a lot of people to rethink the difficulty of this series because the one thing that St. Louis has that is dramatically better than San Jose is goaltending. And yet San Jose got six goals off of them in game one. So I think people who thought, and I would say the majority of hockey aficionados looked at St. Louis as the better team. I think they're rethinking that on the fly now.
Well, the Sharks scored 45 more goals during the seasons than the Blues did, but Pete DeBoer must be unhappy about Sharks giving up three goals.
Not really, because I think what he was looking for all along was a more stable defensive group because the first few games of the Vegas series, they were awful defensively from goaltender Martin Jones on out. And so they were having a very difficult time keeping the puck out of the net. Game one was not a serious problem for them because they seemed to have the game pretty much in hand throughout. And St. Louis sort of tried to resort to doing a lot more hitting, trying to disrupt the Sharks, and it didn't work. So I think three goals he's fine with as long as he knows he's going to get five or six, and he's got the firepower to do that. So I don't think he was as bothered with the defense in game one as he has been earlier in the playoffs.
As far as both of these matchups, though, the Sharks clearly have more talent, and so do the Dubs.
The Sharks have more talent, but the St. Louis was the worst team in hockey on January the 4th. And since then, they've been almost unbeatable to the point where people look at them now and go, I don't know how anybody's going to beat them. Their goaltender, Jordan Binnington, has proven to be a godsend for them. And by and large, when you get a team that is really, really good for 4 months, you have a cup contender. San Jose is a good team that goes in fits and starts. And right now, they're in sort of a good place. But by the middle of this series, they could revert again. They're hard to figure out game to game.
Again, we're talking to Ray Ratto, and we do want to hear from you. If you have thoughts about the Warriors, the Sharks, playoffs, fever in general here in the Bay Area, or any questions you might have, please feel free to be part of the program. Again, you can join us toll-free at 866-733-6786 or by email forum@kqed.org or go to our website and post there at kqed.org/forum. And St. Louis on the Air is a talk show at St. Louis Public Radio. They challenge us to a small wager. If the Sharks lose to the Blues, we'll temporarily change our show logo to theirs and send them some Bay Area cuisine. If you have suggestions, by the way, for what food we should ask St. Louis on the Air to send us when the Sharks win the series, tag us on Twitter. We're at KQED Forum. You've been doing a lot of Twitter stuff about Charlie Pierce, by the way. You want to talk about that?
Oh, well, I've known Charlie for 450 years, so we just go back and forth on whatever subject sort of hits us at the moment. So it's nothing. I mean, it's nothing planned. It's just he'll tweet something, I'll tweet something back at him. It's to even call it good natured is to give it more gravitas than it deserves. It's just two guys screwing around on the internet.
Well, we're now joined by Dave Miller. He's the host of Think Out Loud, the local talk show on Oregon Public Radio, and he's going to let us know why he thinks the Trailblazers are such a formidable opponent. Welcome, Dave. Good to have you.
Thanks very much. Good to be on the show.
Yeah, well, tell us why. There's a lot of Dubs fans who think this is not going to be a formidable opponent, but you are saying it is going to be. Why?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, you can look at the regular season where the teams split. Obviously, the regular season is different from the playoffs, but nevertheless, the games were pretty good, most of them this year. What's more, the Blazers right now, I mean, a lot of people, including in Oregon, didn't think that they were going to get past the first round. The night that they clinched a playoff spot, they lost their star center, Yusuf Nurkic, to this gruesome compound fracture. And yet the Blazers pulled together in every game, basically, in the first two rounds. A different player has risen to the occasion. I mean, the star guard, Damian Lillard, had this extraordinary shot that made international news that propelled him to the second round. But since then, he hasn't had too many great games. But other players have stepped up every single day or night. So, I mean, at the very least, Portland fans are hoping for an exciting series. But I think a lot of folks here think it could be a real series.
Well, what's the mood in Portland? I mean, this is the first conference final, I think, since 2000. Is that right?
Yeah, the mood. I mean, yesterday it was for the first time in a while we actually got a day game. So the weather was fantastic. Everyone was watching the game, and then you know I went out and about, and everyone was you know riding their bike around in the sunny day. Everyone it seemed was wearing red and black. On social media, you know there are pictures of toddlers with their Blazers gear put on. You assume by their parents, but there is a real sense of excitement right near the arena where the Blazers play the Moda Center, there was a sign. This went up, and fans spent about $10,000 in a GoFundMe campaign. They put up a billboard for this the rising star center, Yusuf Nurkic. It says, "We love you, Nurkic." It's in English and in Bosnian. This is a guy, you know, who he makes millions, and yet fans spent their own money simply to put up a sign saying, "We love you." I mean, it's a sign, I think, of of how much fans here care about this team. And the
and to go to the trouble to learn Bosnian, too, which you know, has so many consonants and so few vowels.
Yeah. Yeah, and then with all the extra little things on top of the letters as well, yeah, which you know costs money when you're going to put it. You don't get every letter for free. So it's a small example of how I think the level of fondness that fans have for this team, and it seems like in the last few weeks it's become more than just a casual relationship between fans and team. People really love this team.
Well, there's lots of goodwill here. We were talking about it before with Ray Ratto for Lillard, who is from Oakland. How do people feel there about the Warriors? I mean, I wonder, because there are a lot of Warriors fans there. So many people have moved there from here.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting because I don't think there's a hatred for the Warriors, not like the Lakers. There's a grudge and respect, I think it's fair to say, for the Warriors, especially because they don't have a long history of being great and of beating the Blazers in embarrassing ways. Your greatness is you know, more recent, relatively speaking. But I have to say, adding Kevin Durant to an already championship caliber team, even if he's injured now and as we were hearing, may not be a factor in this round, may not play for the rest of the season. We'll see. It just goes against a lot of our ideas of sort of elementary school rules of sports. I mean, if you're playing kickball and one team keeps beating all the others, you don't get the best player from some other team and put him on the team that's already the best. It just goes against, a basic sense of fairness. I think that's also on Portlanders' mind. It's worth pointing out, it's not like Portland has a low salary overall in terms of the team. It's below the Warriors, but they're both closer to the top than the bottom.
Dave Miller with us, host of Think Out Loud, the local talk show on Oregon Public Radio. And can I just ask you to respond to something in the Oregonian today? Quote, the same basketball team that overcame the death of its owner, the starting center's shattered leg, an assistant coach's automobile accident, and faced back-to-back elimination games found a way to win. That's kind of what you were intimating when you were talking about how resilient and kind of unexpectedly powerful this team was, I take it, against Denver. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Paul Allen, the owner, obviously a famous software executive, he's the first person in that list you mentioned. He died in October, just the day before the season started. And there have been a lot of questions back then about – I mean, they weren't particularly serious questions because there's – I think no one here really believes that the new owners of the team are going to move them. But that was in the Twitter sphere a little bit. Will we even have the Blazers in Portland, in Oregon in the coming years? As you mentioned, then facing elimination in back-to-back games. I already mentioned Yusuf Nurkic and the gruesome injury and the love for him. And then this was something that a lot of us in the first couple days last week didn't quite realize until all the members of the team and staff all wore bow ties last week. That was because this assistant coach, John Yim, he was injured in a pretty bad automobile crash along with a number of members of his family. And he was famous for wearing bow ties. So in solidarity, they did that. The team has been through a lot of adversity, and you know, it seems like even though it's involved a lot of pain in some ways, it has also made them stronger as a team.
Well, Dave, thank you so much for joining us. We got a wager on, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we'd always love to get whatever foods you think are worthy of coming up here. But I would say when the Blazers win, we will send you a Think Out Loud from Oregon Public Broadcasting mug. And why don't you drink your beverage of choice in it and put the picture on social media so the whole world can see that that the Trailblazers have beat the Warriors.
If that comes to pass, you have my commitment to it. But Ray Ratto, let me thank Dave Miller again for being with us. Not likely
Thanks
to come
much.
To pass, Dave, Ray?
Not likely, but one of the things that is fun about the Blazers, above and beyond the fact that they're a good team that maybe has overachieved a bit, it's the first team Portland has ever had. And even though their professional soccer team, the Timbers, is very popular, the Timbers, the Blazers have a relationship with that town that has been tested over and over again. They won a championship in the 70s with Bill Walton. They then had a period where they took really high-risk players and who got arrested so much that they became known as the Jailblazers. But this team, I think, is one that Portland has sort of just gravitated to. And now that they're sort of playing with the casino's money, I can see what Dave is talking about.
It's also the only professional team they have in Oregon.
Well, they like I said, they have the professional soccer team, the Timbers.
Right, but nobody
and, well, they're but they draw really, really well. I mean, they are extraordinarily popular in that town. So it's not like the Blazers have the stage to themselves, but because they were first, they're always going to have that bond that the Timbers won't have because they were the team that, quote, made Portland Major League.
Here's Jeff. Jeff, you're on the air with us. Morning.
Hey, thanks for having me. And I just wanted to thank you, first of all, for your consistently outstanding show, Michael. I do not take that for granted.
Thank you.
Ray, I wanted to know, you know, the Sharks obviously have a insane fan base. And I want to know if I'm atypical in being satisfied with the Sharks making the playoffs, what is it, like 25 of their 28 years or something, and coming up just short. Yes, it's frustrating, but, you know, we're not a franchise like Florida or someone who would just be happy to be, well, Florida has a championship, but, I mean, has gotten to the finals once, but you know what I mean? Am I atypical in that I appreciate a consistently good franchise, and I'm not that upset without having gone all the way yet.
Jeff, let me thank you for the question. Ray Ratto, quickly, if you could.
I think he probably is atypical just because the Sharks have been to the playoffs so many times and not gotten over the hump and only been to one Stanley Cup final in all these years of very good hockey. I think the fan base, they champ at the bit now. They're going, when are we getting over the top? When are we getting over the top? And it becomes this sort of mantra that plays in everybody's heads.
And I remind listeners, I thank Ray Ratto for being with us, and also thank Dave Miller and the last caller. And this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And let me go to a comment here from a listener, actually a question for you, Ray. Hockey is the most brutal team sport. It requires a lot to make it through four physical playoff rounds to win the Stanley Cup. It's a shame hockey doesn't get the respect it deserves, but the whole NHL knows how loud and proud San Jose fans are in the SAP Center. There's nothing like it. Point well taken. Here's Martin, who is making some food recommendations for the wager with St. Louis. If the Sharks win the series, ask for St. Louis barbecue ribs, deep-fried ravioli, Ted Drew's frozen custard. I'm from St. Louis, and I think that just about covers it. Will you seek out any food when you're in St. Louis, Ray?
St. Louis is actually very well known for its Italian area, and they have a series of genuinely great Italian restaurants. I mean, where they rival anybody's. The barbecue I'm not as crazy about because I think Kansas City does it better, but that's just Missouri snobbery that I don't have the right to have. But you can eat pretty well in St. Louis, so yeah, I think you won't do poorly either way.
Question from Craig. Can you give us your summation of the Houston series with the Warriors? It's a big question, but...
You know. The Houston series was the one that everybody who follows basketball was almost sort of calling the finals before the finals, because Houston has sort of had the Warriors as their fixation for 5 years now, and they've never gotten past them. But this was the year it was going to happen. They were sure of it. And they play the Warriors in a very difficult way, and the Warriors have a hard time with Houston, more maybe than any other team. But the thing that changed the series was when Durant went down and Houston fans were sure, this is the moment. We've got him where we want him. Well, they didn't win that game. And then they came back in game six. They didn't win that one. So now Houston is basically enveloped by this notion that we'll never beat these guys. I mean, we had them at their worst. I mean, they were down two potential future Hall of Famers. You know, they were battered. They were old. You know, they were showing signs of creaking. You know, Curry and Klay Thompson weren't doing anything, and we still couldn't get over the top. And I think that probably is the thing that's going to resonate most with people who follow the NBA, certainly through this series, because I don't think people take Portland as seriously as they did Houston. So until the finals, whoever they play, either Milwaukee or Toronto, I think the Warriors are going to look back at the Houston series as the one that reproved what they've been trying to tell everybody. Said, look, we're the best until somebody says we're not, and we just proved it again.
This reminded me of a question I wanted to ask you, which is, this is the end of an era by many people's lights. I mean, especially because of the move from Oracle, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that. I mean, there's actually fear that this is the end of the era. I mean, we don't know what Durant's future is going to be in terms of a contract. We've got 47 seasons, which have come to an end now from Oakland, and we're beginning, a lot of people have sort of said, no, it's just a move to a different city a few miles away, but it's going to be the same Dubs.
It's not a move to a different city. It's a move to a different fan base, meaning that as expensive as it is to go to Warriors games now, it's going to be even more expensive in the Chase Center because, one, they have to pay for it. Two, it is, by all accounts, way, way over the top in terms of just arena design and everything. And people are going to have to pay for that.
You got a lot of new millionaires, too, coming from these IPOs.
Yeah. And it will not be nearly as easy for East Bay fans to make the trek over just because of traffic patterns and, you know, what time you get home after a Warriors game in San Francisco as opposed to a Warriors game in Oakland. So I think over time, the Warriors are going to have to rebuild a lot of their in-house fan base. They'll always have people who like watching them, but there are a lot of people in the East Bay who are going to watch them from afar now. And the other thing is, it's getting to be an older team. You know, Curry's 30. Thompson's going to be 30. Durant is 30 and maybe on his way out. This is a team that is starting to, I don't want to say show signs of age, but they can see it on the horizon. So I think there is some concern among some people who like to worry about the Warriors that these magic times, these last 5 years in which they've basically hit the lottery year after year, are coming to an end. Not necessarily this year, but maybe next, probably by 2021 for sure. So I think there's a level of slow motion finality to it that I don't think anybody can get their hands around, but they can just sense it.
Ray Ratto with us again, longtime Bay Area sports writer, former columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. And Kathleen tweets, the difference for the San Jose Sharks fans this playoff season is that fans are cheering, we want the cup. In the past, fans wanted to proceed to the next round of playoffs. Eye on the prize. We'll leave it there. Ray, always good to see you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good to see you, Michael. Thank you.
And thanks to Dave Miller, host of Think Out Loud. We'll see how that wager goes. Go Dubs and go Sharks. And thanks for being a part of our program this morning. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.